Some of you know that I live on Copeland Street in Rochester. I've lived there for 39 years. The house was built in 1900, and I'm only the third owner in 123 years. Benny and Josephine Danielli were there before me. They were there for 50 years. I knew them very well. I used to go over there for dinner, and then they gave me the house before they died in the early 1980s. Benny and Josephine came from Italy. Benny had a big barn in the backyard. He had fruit trees, big vegetable garden, and he grew tons of grapes, and he made wine in the basement. So many people used to do that. Some of the grapes are still there along the edges of my yard. So I was thinking, if Benny came back today, he'd find some things the same and some things a little different. He'd probably say, "I like how you kept up the house. The yard looks nice, but where's the barn? Because I took that down. And look at the apple tree. I used to have good apples, now they're crab apples. And look at the pear tree and the mulberry tree. They're still there, but they hardly give any fruit. And look at the poor grapes. Those vines are in bad shape. They've all shriveled up, they've turned wild, they've become bitter. You can't make any wine out of those grapes." It's like the reading today from Isaiah. God planted a vineyard on the hillside that sloped down to the valley, and he planted the choicest of wine of grapes. So he's going to have some really good wine. And then in the fall, God came to look for the harvest. But what God saw was not good grapes, but wild grapes, bitter grapes. And God says, "What happened? I planted good grapes. What happened here? How come there's wild grapes?" And God continued, "You, O people, are my vineyard. I came looking for justice, and I found people killing each other. I came looking for righteousness, and all I hear was the cries of the oppressed. What went wrong with my people? Instead of yielding good grapes, you produced bitter grapes. And now I'm going to change leadership. I'll turn the vineyard over to people who are going to yield good grapes, to people who are going to give justice." Remember Mary Magdalene when she met Jesus after the resurrection? She saw him at the tomb, but she didn't recognize him. She thought he was the gardener. Well, actually, Mary Magdalene was right. He was the gardener. He was Jesus, but he was also the gardener. Just like his father, God, was the original gardener in the Garden of Eden. And God is still the gardener, still the gardener today. God is still planting choice grapes, looking for good grapes, so God can make the best wine of compassion and justice. Jesus says, "My Father is the vine grower. He's the gardener. I'm the vine, you're the branches. Go out and bear good fruit." Good fruit, not bitter fruit. About 2 years after we started Spiritus Christi, there was a priest from Albany who was kind of curious about our new church. And he said, "Could you take me around?" And I said, "Sure." So I took him to Jennifer House, our home for ex-offender women, Grace of God Recovery House. I showed him the mental health center, talked about Chiapas and Haiti. So I said to the priest, "What do you think?" He said, I don't know. I'm not sure what to make of this breakaway church. He said, "For me, the jury is still out about Spiritus Christi." He said, "But what I have to say is this. Jesus said, 'By the fruits you will know them,' and all I can see is good fruits." He said, "I know a bad tree doesn't bear good fruit." Well, now we're many years later. Matter of fact, we're 25 years this year. We're celebrating our Diamond Jubilee. We're halfway through it, yep. We're halfway through it. Started from last May, Pentecost, the Feast of the Spirit, until next Pentecost. We're going to have a big blowout on next May for Pentecost, our 25th. But we're about halfway through, so it's a good time to look back and look at the vineyard and see what kind of grapes we're producing. So at the beginning of our history, we built on the three issues that got us in trouble with the Vatican: having women can celebrate the Mass, doing LGBTQ weddings, and having open communion. As for the women, we figured out a way to get women ordained, and Reverend Mary Rammerman was the first one to get ordained in 2001, followed by Reverend Denise Donato, Reverend Hava Redene, Reverend Patty LaRosa, Reverend Myra Brown, and Reverend C. Lee Katovich. We're making a lot of progress, but, you know, there's still some dismantling of the patriarchal influences to do in our church. We've made a lot of progress, but there's still those patriarchal influences. Like, for example, people come to me a lot, the male priest, when they could go to the other two priests, the female priest, but it's like tradition or whatever, but it's going to take a long time to change these things. And by the way, we want to salute the woman that won the Nobel Peace Prize in Iran. Wasn't that great? Narges Mohammadi is presently in jail for fighting against women's oppression. She campaigned in Iran for women's rights, democracy, and against the death penalty. And now she's in jail. And here's what she said: "It's all worth it, even if I spend the rest of my life in jail." What a great lady. As for the LGBTQ weddings, we've been doing them since 1993, 30 years. We used to hold them in people's homes and backyards and restaurants and parks because we couldn't do it in church, but now we do it in church the way other weddings are done. We even had a gay couple, Lori Mara and Lisa Moretto, run the marriage prep program for years and years. This year, Lauren Urzetta, our hospitality ministry, organized a pride weekend, and she invited a trans clergyman, Reverend Alex Regan, to speak at the masses, and a lot of you heard him. And a lot of you went to the Pride Parade. So as for the third issue, the communion, giving communion to everybody that we got in trouble for, now for me, that's a no-brainer, giving communion to everybody. It's like Jesus 101. Because when Jesus fed people, and he did, he fed people quite often, he didn't say, "Well, are you Catholic? Are you divorced? Are you gay? Are you straight?" He didn't ask any questions, just here. He fed them. And so we started the ecumenical mass on Tuesdays over at Park Avenue Church, the Emmanuel Baptist. So we have Baptists and Catholics worshiping together at the mass, breaking down the walls. Reverend Seeley invited homilists from the Muslim, Buddhist, pagan, and Quaker traditions to speak at that mass. Also, during COVID, something brand new happened, and that was with people having bread and wine at their houses, like many of you do too, like today, watching the mass today. But that all started the first time we live streamed in 2020, and Reverend Myra and I were sitting there, and she was going up to the pulpit, and she said, "Do you think we should ask them to have bread and juice or bread and wine before them so they can have the Eucharist too?" And I go, I started to think about it, because that's a pretty big jump, you know. But soon she came right up to this pulpit and says, "Hey, by the way, everybody should have their bread and wine in front of them at their houses." So I guess, hey, it's done. And and it worked, and it's still working. Like, that could have been very controversial, but it wasn't. So necessity is the mother of theology. So that's that issue. As Spiritus Christi got older, we found new ways to bear fruit. We started the Mother Earth community, which many of you are part of, in order to protect the earth. We now have regular green spots to encourage people to respect our environment. Our masses in the park and our church dinners now have composting opportunities. The Grace of God Recovery House got an energy grant to get new efficient heat pumps and air conditioning recently. And Nielsen House received a grant to start a community garden, which now is feeding the neighborhood. We also got into housing. That was another one of our fruits. We built dozens of safe, affordable housing for the poor. We partnered with home leasing and secured millions of dollars from the state. And now we have 80 graduates of our outreach programs living in Voters Block, Frederick Douglass Building, Charlotte on the Loop, Thurston Village, Flower City Housing on Culver, and Flower City Housing on East Main Street. And our newest one, we just broke ground on Federal Street, which is near the bus barns on East Main. And we have a Grace of God Recovery House graduate, somebody who went through the program, who's now the case manager at one of these places. So we're making really good progress. One of our most important adventures in bearing fruit is the Anti-Racism Coalition. We tried to deal honestly and openly with white supremacy here in the parish. It's not just out there. It's here among all of us. And we want to be honest about that. What we've done, we've hired people of color in key positions, especially that of our pastor. We've led the establishment of the Franklin Florence Heritage Site in Baden Park. We've started an indigenous solidarity group to heal damages to Native Americans. And we've done work on reparations to heal 400 years of damage to Black Americans. Reparations. So, for example, we started the Black Community Focus Fund, which many of you support. Many of you give to that. This provides funds for people in zip code 14605. The money goes to the leaders there. They decide what's going to happen with the money to make their community better. We're also taking the lead in the Guaranteed Basic Income program that the City of Rochester is sponsoring. People under a certain income will receive $500 a month for one whole year. And after they have received that money, they don't have to decide, do I buy groceries or do I buy medicine? So far, we've enrolled 175 people who started receiving their checks already last month, and presently we're enrolling the final 175 people. Dozens of people come through our doors to be interviewed and enrolled. And it just gives me such a good feeling to know that we're doing something to even the playing field. It's small, but it's something. We're doing something. We're going in the right direction. Spiritus Christi will host a community meeting on reparations on Tuesday, October 17th. State Senator Kevin Parker called Reverend Myra this week and asked us, would we host the meeting? The reparations bill has already passed both houses in Albany, and this bill examines the impact of slavery on New York State citizens of African descent, and it calls for appropriate compensations to be made for the future. The October 17th meeting will help roll this out to the public. Senator Parker chose our church because of our work already on the reparation. So, in our 25th year, our church continues to bear fruit. Last month, many of you served brunch to 150 asylum seekers over at Celebration Hall. Since then, we started a clothing closet on the second floor of our church. And this week, we're installing a bike rack for the people that have bikes. They live at the Holiday Inn. They don't have any place to put their bikes. They need their bikes to get groceries and medicine and clothes. So we're able to give something back. The Protestant churches welcomed us when we were a new church 25 years ago. They gave us great hospitality, and it feels good to be able to give hospitality to somebody else. Another recent parish priority is our focus on children. We're trying to make children the centerpiece of our church. And it's great to have Bernadette, who's going to be baptized in a few minutes. You're one of our greatest young people, so thank you for your commitment today, what you're doing. It means an awful lot to all of us, Bernadette. But we do have great children in our church. Dr. Starsky Wilson from the Children's Defense Fund spoke earlier this year. And soon, October 28th and 29th, is a weekend where we celebrate the Children's Sabbath. It's a nationwide celebration of children, to say that children are important, and we're going to honor them and pray for them. We're going to sign petitions that will help our kids to thrive, not just to exist, but to thrive. We're supporting child care assistance. We're increasing child tax credits, and we also want to reduce school suspensions. You know, school suspensions are terrible for kids. They keep getting suspended over and over again, and they keep falling back, and just leads to very bad things. So we want to put an end to that or reduce it. So we try to bear fruit here at the church. While we're trying to do this, a big thing is happening in the world. There's a second industrial revolution going on, and that is the shift to electric cars. The transition to electric vehicles is perhaps the biggest technological transformation since Henry Ford invented the assembly line in the early 1900s. Electric vehicles have fewer parts than gas cars, and therefore the jobs will be fewer in the future for car makers. And the United Auto Workers is trying to make sure that this transition benefits all the workers, not just management. So strikers are aware that the CEOs of the big three automakers each make over $20 million salary a year, while the blue-collar workers who make the cars, can often not make ends meet. So they're trying to avoid the pitfalls of the first industrial revolution, where there are big profits for a few and misery for many. So manufacturing jobs are not always good jobs. Manufacturing jobs that are unionized are good jobs. Unions have been powerful advocates, not just for salaries, but for things like childhood education and childcare. That's why the church has always been, the Catholic Church has been an advocate for labor unions consistently. Labor unions help even the playing field. They're watchdogs putting a check on executive salaries, and they provide benefits to the workers. Isaiah says today, "I look for grapes, but I find only bitter grapes. I look for justice, but all I heard was cries of the oppressed, people who are getting oppressed by the system. Therefore, I will find new owners for the vineyard. I'll find leaders who are going to bring justice." Sadly, yesterday, war broke out again between Palestinians and Israelis. More than 300 were killed on each side just yesterday. This tragic conflict has gone on for decades with no end in sight. While no perfect solution is available, there is one group that is doing something positive about this, something creative to bring peace in that country. You may have heard of the Oasis of Peace Village in Israel, the Oasis of Peace. This was started by a priest in 1972, about 50 years ago. It's a few miles south of Jerusalem, and it's a unique city because there are 35 Palestinian families and 35 Israeli families that live there. If one of the Israeli families moves out, they're replaced by an Israeli family. If one of the Palestinian families moves out, a Palestinian family moves in to keep the balance, because it's an intentional community to show that peace is possible, that Muslims and Jews and Christians can live together. One resident said this week, "It's an experiment. Some of it works, some of it doesn't. But we're continuing the experiment. It's a statement against the status quo. We're saying that things can be different. We can live together in peace. This is not a dream. It's actually happening, and we're making it happen." One of my favorite psalms is Psalm 84. "When we walk through the valley of bitterness, we turn it into a valley of lush vegetation." I think of Spiritus Christi. I think of Bernadette, all the young people. We walk through this world, which is often filled with bitterness. We walk through the valley of bitterness, but we turn it into a valley of lush vegetation. We change it for the better. Every morning I watch the news on television. It's always the same. 3 shootings, 2 house fires, 4 robberies. After that, I read the New Testament. There's a man in the church, Joe, who did it the other way around. He said, "Before I pick up the paper and read the bad news, I have to pick up the Bible and read the good news." Whatever way we do it, we got to keep in mind Psalm 84. We walk through the valley of bitterness, and we turn it into a valley of lush vegetation. We're not here just to survive, just to cope with what's going on, not to just get by, to exist. We're not here to survive bad news. We're here to create good news. Everybody in Rochester knows Don Ehlhardt, the Channel 13 anchor. He just set a Guinness World Record. He is the longest-running male TV anchor, 57 years. He told Guinness, "My favorite part is being able to put others in the news. I end every broadcast with what we call a bright spot. The bright spot highlights a person or an organization that is doing something to make life better for other people." Before we die, we should do 2 things. We should leave something, and we should take something away. We should leave a lot of love, and we should take away some of the bitterness. Amen.